This week's parsha is Vayera, so we're going to learn a piece from Vigadita on that parsha. And the piece is entitled Eirech Hadin VeHakelev, the lawyer and the dog. Sounds like a joke, but it's quite humorous actually. But let's start. Okay, so Pagash Bi Eirech Din Meramat Gan. Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky is talking, of course. And he says that I bumped into a lawyer from the city of Ramat Gan, and his anyein b'mata isek. And he asked me, "What do you do?" Anisi, and I answered, "Ani darish barab. I'm a darshan. I'm a magid." Sha'al, and he asked, "Efa, where do you do this?" Anisi, efa shemazminim isi. Wherever they ask me to come, that's where I go. Tama. So he got confused. And from that, you're able to survive. You can make a living from that. Anisi, I answered him, Ataraya, you see, Ani Chai Baruch Hashem, I seem alive, so, you know, I guess so. V'kama ata makabal haritza, how much do you get for every speech that you give? Anisi b'chenus, I don't know exactly. They pay me only at the end is when I get my payment. Fine, but when do they, how much do they give? When they give a check at the end, how much is that for? Amarti, I don't know. When I get there to whatever place it is, that's when I see. I don't know exactly. I don't have it all calculated beforehand. Hufta, so he was surprised. He says, "Ritzaincha loymer she'ata eved b'chinam." You're trying to tell me that you work for free? Ani lo mevin. So this is Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky giving his, you know, his narrative. He says, "I don't understand. Arach din b'cheirish. He's a lawyer, and it seems like he's deaf." B'feirish amarti shemishalman va'oid eich. He says, "I never said I was working for free. I said that I do get paid, but I'm going to get paid at the end, meaning that at the end of my job, that's when they pay me. I never said that I was working for free." And to no one in particular, the lawyer said, "I wouldn't be able to do that. I would not be able to work without getting paid." And so I said to him, "But you know, in a way, you do work for free. You do work for nothing." Lehaven, he didn't understand. Lehayisi beicher beliatzeg I see. Amarti beetzem niskarti. Gamani lehaven bechinam. So I didn't want to chaper with him, so I just basically told him straight out that I also don't work for free. And b'derech klal, kishem azminim tzibur l'drasha, when I'm invited by a community to give a drasha, magishim kibud kal, they give me some, you know, a little bit of honor. V'gam oisi l'sheichim, Magishim kashdi akara, they give me a nice cold drink. Matzim ugia, they give me a cookie. Hifter zelo nechshav, that's not important. Mashanoistim sham zeklom, imata magia bai. So whatever they give you there is nothing, but what do you come home with? What do you bring home in terms of, you got a nice cup of tea, you got a cookie, that's nice, but like, what in terms of like salary? What are you making? What do you bring home? Ay kananti, vimata magia bai. He says, what exactly do you bring home? Vulaev, and he didn't understand what I was saying. Mikra Ovid was like a lost cause. Taiv, im kol echad yesh ledav b'svasai, amarti b'ay v'sish masibar. I had to explain it to him in a way that he would understand. So he said, I said to him, "Come, let me tell you a story." This is actually a pretty well-known story. And it's quite humorous, but it's very important. There's a lot of mussar in the story. Sipur muchan kalech l'shmei. As soon as you tell a story to anybody, So their ears open up and they like it. Lahavin zekfayin nachin. Now whether they understand the moral of the story is a different story, but at least they can get into a story. Nahagmonis yisir rav echel rav shach zatzal. There was a taxi driver that was driving somebody to Rav Shach, Baderach, and on the way to Rav Shach, Sipur Oysa Rav al Gadlusai, Shel Rav Shach v'tzidkusai. So he was telling the taxi driver, this rabbi, how great Rav Shach is and how much of a tzaddik he is, al Gainusai, how brilliant he is, v'tzidkusai, and wise, v'tuv midaisav, and how excellent are his midais and adivas liba, his generosity. Calls Elidi Berlinag, it wasn't really appealing to this taxi driver. He didn't care too much. Who Ratzel Adas Tavrechet, he wanted to know one thing. He didn't want to hear about the Abiezeris. He didn't want to hear about anything. He just wanted to know one thing about this Rav Shach. Harav Hazeh Noten Brachot. Does this rabbi give brachas? Does he give blessings? Nu Vadei Gamzei, of course he gives blessings. That too, I forgot to say that. Ma gam ze ezehu tzarech hu yachal itztarif, meaning this is what I need. It's not a gamze. This is exactly, that's all I need from him. I just need a bracha. Do you think I'd be able to come in with you? He asked the rabbi, when you're going to this big rabbi, Rav Shach, this grand rabbi, would I be able to join you? Lama lo. So he said to him, why not? Allah im harav. So he got out of the taxi together with the Rav. Kafatz Barosh, he basically jumped ahead of the Rav when going into Rav Shach's room. Nisheg Esayad, he kissed Rav Shach's hand, and he said, Harav, ani zokuk dochuf lebracha. I really, really, really need a bracha, and now. Tevarach, tevarach. So he says, you should be blessed. Well, I don't need the bracha myself. So a kalba shel yichala, my dog is sick. My dog needs a bracha. Sharav yasla mishaberach. I'm asking Rav Shach to make a special mishaberach for my dog. Okay. Sarav ahu chashav shumispalitz. So the rabbi that went with him thought he was like nuts. Avla Rav Shach. Litev yade pava. Rav Shach was like stroking his hand lovingly. Vadai, vadai, for sure. Tzar balei chayim. It's tzar balei chayim that this dog should be sick. And miyad, miyad, nikach siddur. Let's take a siddur together and let's start saying the mishaberach. The kamim tishim shenaisav. And Rav Shach, with all of his 90 years, stood up. Natal siddur. He took a siddur. V'diftev l'kriyas hatayra. And he flip the pages to Kriyas HaTaira, L'misha Berach L'chayla, Kerev Le'ena V'kara Barikos. He basically scrunched his eyes and he said with a lot of kavana, Misha Berach Aveseinu Avraham Yitzchak. It's an amazing story, no? It's an amazing story. Misha Berach Aveseinu Avraham Yitzchak V'yakev. Tonight's Rav Shach's Yartzeit?
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow? Yeah.
Tomorrow night.
Mishaberach Aviseinu Avraham Yitzchak V'Yakov Moshe V'Aaron David U'Shlema Hu Yivarech Es HaChayla. And then he panel hanag hanirgash, he turned to the very emotional taxi driver and he says, Ma Hashem, what's the name? Lassie. I don't know if anyone knows, Lassie was like a TV show 100 years ago with the very famous about a dog. Anyway, Lassie Bas Panashival Anahag Mashemim. What's the mother's name? What's Lassie's mom's name? Hanag Navach. So at that point, that confused the taxi driver a little bit. Ha'ima Shala Kalba, the mother of my dog. Miyede, who knows? Oz Mishaberach Yev Shalaymah. So Rav Shach says, I can't make Mishaberach if you don't have the mother's name. I'm sorry. Rav Shach Sagaras HaSidur. Rav Shach closed the Siddur. Of a bracha after losses behechle tzar balechaim, but a bracha I can give you because for sure there's an issue of tzar balechaim. That was the end of the story. It's an amazing story. It's like Pile Plon. I've read the story in a few different places. That was Rav Shach. Rav Shach was very, you know, I don't think anyone else in the world would have gone through all the motions. Rav Shach had a heart of gold, and he wanted to, you know, he wanted to give the person what he needed. So he says, this is all the story that Rav Yaakov Galinsky was telling this lawyer. So he says to the lawyer, Ata mevin, shalti asarchin, do you understand what I'm saying to you? Understand the message? Eifa, mevin ma, hushala, understand what? His barati tavin, you should understand. This is what you have to understand. And Rav Yaakov Galinsky spelled it out very clearly for this lawyer that was very confused at this point. Ani mechuber la'aba shali, o mechuber la'banim shali. I have an attachment to my parents and to my children. Ani chulya b'sharsheres hadaris. I am a chain, a link in the chain that spans generations. Avram Avinu, ein lanu musag b'gadlusay. Avram Avinu, we don't have any conception of how great Avram Avinu was. We talk about him, and we have no idea who he really was. Hisnasa b'asar nesyanis v'am b'kulam. He was tested with 10 tests, and he made it through all of them with flying colors. He passed all of them. Oh, b'schus ma zocha l'chiba sabar yisparach. So you think, okay, that's why Hashem loves him, because he's willing to sacrifice Yitzchak on the Akedah, because he's willing to be thrown into a casket, because he's willing to do lech lecha, to fight the kings. All the nesyanis that he had, that's why Hashem loves him, right? Wrong. That's not why Hashem loved him. There's a pasuk that says, Mikra Mefayrishu. The pasuk says, Ki yedativ, because I love him. Rashi says, Yedativ is Lashon Ava, like, Ha'adam Yada as Chav Ishta. Yada doesn't mean always to know. It means to have a certain love or intimacy with somebody. L'man Hashi Yitzave es Banav, des Pesach. What do I love about Avraham Avinu? Because L'man Hashi Yitzave es Banav, es Pesach. Because Avraham Avinu, he commands, he orders his sons and his household after him, the Shamru Derech Hashem, Lasei Tzedakah U'Mishpat, to keep the way of Hashem and to do acts of charity, acts of justice, righteousness. So basically, the Torah is spelling out very clearly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves about Avraham. We know that Avraham Avinu was beloved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are psukim that say Avraham Ayavi. Avraham Avinu was the most beloved person maybe ever in the history of the world to Hashem. Why did Hashem love him? You know, you can come up with a lot of different reasons, but you don't have to. Because there's a pasuk that says exactly what, and it's not the pasuk that you would expect a pasuk to say about Avraham Avinu. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves about Avraham Avinu is that he gave over the Messiah, whatever he had, he gave over to his children and to his family after him to keep the Derech Hashem, to keep the way, the path of Hashem, to do tzedakah u'mishpat. Rabbi Seinu Amru, bra kara davua, that a child is a foot of his father. Habenu karagli aviv. What does that mean? B'chol mitzvah shani mekayim. Every mitzvah that I do, ani meisiv zchus lahayrei, shechanchuni l'kach, u'lahayrei hayrei, v'kach adlo aviz hakadoshim. Puts a very big sense of responsibility on our shoulders, right? Every single thing that we do, every mitzvah that we do, and the flip side is also true, but let's keep it positive, every mitzvah that I do is a reflection on my parents and on my grandparents, my great-great-great-grandparents, and they get a schus for that. They get schusim every time we do a mitzvah. So that schus accrues to our parents and to our grandparents all the way up to the Avos HaKadoshim. You know, you think that when a person dies, that's it. And that's the common understanding. You wouldn't be wrong for saying that. There's many chazal that say that when you die, you're considered to be an aymed. When you're alive, you're a mahalach. You're somebody that's able to steig and to grow and to climb. And when a person dies, all of that stops. It comes to like a screeching halt, and you're basically static where you are. This is known. I mean, this is famous Torah from the Gra. That's why the Gra, before he died, was crying. As Chalom HaYitzchukis, 1797, he was crying and he was saying that that in this world you're able to buy for a few dollars a pair of tzitzis that you're going to be able to get tremendous schar for. And the next world, where I'm about to go, this is the Gra speaking. The Gra already, I'm sure, was kind of 1,000 Eilamas up there at least. He says, even if I would offer them $1 billion in Shamayim, I wouldn't be able to get that mitzvah. There's no more mitzvah. It's over. Game over. As soon as a person dies, there's no more schar, there's no more aliyah, there's no more steiging. That's it. You're done. But yet, there is still this concept of bra kara davua, that a child is like the foot of his father. And what does that mean, a foot? It means that he is, this is how Rav Huttner explains it, that a father, even after he dies, is still considered a mahalich, somebody that's moving, because of the son who's sort of carrying him on his feet. Bra kara davua, he's the foot of his father, meaning wherever I walk, when I'm going to do good things, then that's like my father. I'm like the feet of my father, even though he's no longer able to move, I am moving for him. And so when a person understands this, they realize that I am a very important link in the Messiah, because whatever I'm doing is really giving schar all the way up the chain, all the way to the Avos HaKadoshim. So it's an interesting thing, like, you know, when we speak about the Avos, we always think about them as people that lived, you know, 4,000 years ago, and they were giants, and they're untouchable. We have no real shaykhs. Obviously, we're related genetically, you know, in who knows how many, you know, millionth of a gene pool that we're related, but you know, we're somehow related, but it's so distant. But it's interesting the way he puts it, that when I do something, then Avraham Avinu, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, they get immediate results from that. In Shamayim, like, all of that is accruing to them. All that everybody is doing is accruing to them. You know, it's the best example that I could think of on the spot now is, you know, there's something called Amway. Anyone ever heard of Amway? I don't know if it's around anymore, but when I was a kid, there was something. Today, there's a lot of other types of things like that, but it's basically a pyramid, some people call it a scheme, but a pyramid scheme. And the way it works is that that I'm selling a certain product. Amway had like whatever it was, like household products. Like they had their own brand of soap and shampoo and you know, different things that you need around the house. And I would make, let's say, a party in my house, and I'd invite everybody to my house. And they had this all the time. People, we had a neighbor that was into it, and you know, you would buy from me for whatever reason. I don't know why you couldn't go to the local supermarket, but you'd buy from me. I would order whatever you needed. This is, of course, before online, before Amazon, so maybe there was a convenience aspect to it. And whatever I sell to you, so I make a profit, but I am like, somebody hopped me into Amway. So the person that sold it, you know, that got me to sell the products, they get a take in whatever I bring in. And the person that got that person in, the person that got that person in, he gets a take. All the way up to the top, like the guy that got everybody into it, he's making like billions of dollars because he has people all over the world, over the...
They go down and they all...
Okay. Maybe, I don't know. But...
I heard my parents were discussing it because... Someone would buy a close family friend's door, was buying into it, so they said, we have to warn them.
Yeah, there's a lot, it's not just this Amway, it's a lot of different things. There's like water, some, you know, water machines, Kangen water, you know, there's a lot of different things, but it's basically the same idea. But the idea is that as many people as I could get under me to sell this product, I make a lot of money. I can't make that much money by selling it just to you, but if each of you, let's say, go out and you sell it in your communities, now all of that accrues to me, and I get very wealthy, and you're gonna get, you know, hundreds of other people to sell under you. And every single time that a dollar is made, I make a few cents on it, but that really adds up. And that's the idea. You know, some people say it's a scam or whatever, maybe it is, but that's the basic idea. But in a positive way, that's what it is to be like the Avos. The Avos started off everything, and then they had children, and they were mitzvah their children to go in that way, and then they had grandchildren, great-grandchildren. You know, you could see sometimes you go to Williamsburg and you see like this old couple, and they have like a family picture with like literally, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of grandchildren and great-grandchildren all around them. It's amazing that two people could produce that many. But, you know, if they get married when they're 19 and they have kids when and they have 10 kids and those kids, you know, all get married at a young age and they have grandchildren that get married at a young age, the math gets crazy. And now you can have literally in your lifetime hundreds and hundreds of descendants. Now imagine, you know, the Avos HaKadoshim, if they would take a family picture of all of Klal Yisrael throughout all the Dairis, it would be an incredible amount of people. It would be, I don't know, maybe definitely millions, but maybe billions, I don't know, of people, a lot of people throughout the generations, and all the way till Yemais HaMashiach, and all of their mitzvahs, all of their schar accrues to them. They're on the top of the chain. So whenever we do something, we're a lot closer to the Avos than we think. Every time we put on a talis, it sits us, we daven, it's all going up through the generation. Our parents get some of that schar, and our grandparents, our great-grandparents, it's a tremendous nachas. When you have, when you start doing mitzvahs properly, and imagine how all the people above you on the chain get tremendous chusim.
What about, there are a lot of invisible pictures, like, the fact that the missile's done because you end up with certain resolutions.
Yep. Okay.
Because one person abstained because of his daughter.
Oh. V'ani mechanech bana l'tara l'mitzvah. So he says the lawyer, I'm being mechanech my children for Torah mitzvahs. Vayidei kach batuach ani shezchuyaisai yaisifo litfayach v'lirbais l'dairadaris. I can be fairly confident that because I am being mechanech my children, and then they will be mechanech their children, so Torah will continue for generations to come through me. Fi amru, shatalmidim kebanim, talmidim are also like children. Kishani Dairesh Umaera Mishahu, when I darshan, says Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky. Meaning, this lawyer was basically just making it out to be a very dollar and cents type of discussion. How much money you make every speech, and how much do you bring home, how much do you take, what's your take home? That's missing the point. I don't know what I take home, I don't know how much money I get paid. But I could tell you one thing, that when I darshan, and I'm able to inspire somebody, and because of that, this person begins to improve his Torah mitzvahs, and he does more of them, and better at them, my zchusim also become very, very, very much greater. You know why they, when you get an aliyah, you're called to the Torah by you, your name and your father's name? When your son gets an aliyah, he's called by his name and my name? I'm not going to be alive forever. Not only are all of my zchusim at the point of death waiting for me in Olam Haba, but all of the zchusim that my sons, my daughters, my grandchildren, my talmidim, the people that come to my shirim, all of those, all that combined inspiration that goes forward, hakol nizkav gam l'zchusim, that also accrues to my credit, l'zchus havaisai ka'amor, and also it goes back up, like we said before. Of a lakelev in kesher. This is his takeaway from that story. That dog, it's a wonderful pet. There's nothing wrong with a dog. Dogs are great. But there's a difference between a dog and a human being, in that a dog does not have a kesher to his mother. If Shach didn't get the name of the dog's mother, because a dog really doesn't have a relationship with a mother. We don't know mother's names. The dog, there's no shaychas between a dog and a mother. There's no shaychas. Loyim hayrav, loyim tzetzav, lacheris bagrusam. There's no connection with the parents, nor with the children, after they get old enough to, you know, get weaned away, I guess, from the mother. Chayu ach v'rak es chayev. It's interesting. That's what animals are. Animals are wonderful. They're very cute, they're furry, they're cuddly, but they're just for themselves. An animal does not have a past, it doesn't have a future. It is what it is. Of course it has parents and it has children, but he's not a link in a chain of anything. He's living his life now, kan v'achshav. Uv'siyam mistayim hakel. And when when he dies, everything goes with him. Everything ends with him. There's no chain. There's no Amway. There's no current up, down, sideways. Nothing. It's a dog. Ani Adam, the Atama. So he says to the lawyer, "So I'm a man, and what are you?" His katziv, he got very upset. Adam lepachdim chama, human being also. I'm no less than you. Amarti she'ena maven. I just told him that he doesn't understand.
Why?
He's not. No, you missed the first part of the share.
Oh.
Okay. So. The point here is that a person has to know what he is in life and the responsibilities that come with being a human being and come with being a Yid. And if we're following Avraham Avinu, then Avraham Avinu, the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu loved him is because he understood his place in life and he understood the purpose that he was living for, and that was to spread Hashem's name. And he did that and he took it seriously and he gave it over to his children, he gave it over to his grandchildren and to everyone until today. There was a ripple effect. Imagine how big of a push Avraham Avinu had to have made for it to last so many thousands of years until today. How much can be done that, you know, if we do something, how much remains from us after we die? Avraham Avinu is no longer alive now for thousands of years, but what he started, there's still the momentum, and it's getting stronger, Baruch Hashem. That it's still pushing forward from generation to generation. There are generations that it's a little weaker, the connection. There's generations that it's stronger. But Avraham Avinu commanded his children with such a push, with such energy, with such force, that it spans through the generations. And until today, we're still keeping Torah mitzvahs because Avraham Avinu started this tremendous push. In life, we have to be good investors. We have to know what to invest our time in. We don't have that much time in life. We have a given amount of years, and we think when we're young that we have forever, and we don't have forever. Life is very limited. We're not going to be young forever, and you know, when you're young, you think that you know there's no end, and you get sort of like you freeze in time at this young age, and the old people in the room are, you know, people that. Old people, you know, sometimes I see really old people and I think about them as really young people. They're young. They're probably looking in the mirror and, you know, wondering, like, what happened? Like, where did this, you know, how did it, when did I turn 90? And so life is very limited, and what you have to do in life, the trick to life is to being on the top of the Amway pyramid. And that means to do as much in this life to get the best results, that when we go to Olam Haba, we really become very wealthy. And how does that happen? That happens by having family, by having talmidim, by having by making wonderful impressions wherever we go. It doesn't mean you have to go into chinuch. You could if you want. This chinuch is actually if we want to talk about that. You know, a lot of times there's career night, and you're gonna, you know, whenever that happens, like they bring alumni who are in different fields. You'll have one room with a lawyer, one room with a doctor, one room with a engineer, one room with a, you know, and basically, so if you're interested in thinking about going into dentistry, you'll go to the room, 215, and that'll be the dentist. You'll have Carlos and Gabi's, and, you know, and you'll hear all the, you know, all the milos of being a dentist, maybe some of the chesreinus. And then there's like, there's somebody that comes back, and he's in chinuch. And, you know, maybe there's like a few schleppers that come into the room to get the pizza or whatever. And, you know, and it's like not the popular major in yeshiva. And I guess the reason for that is because it's not lucrative. It's not a lucrative field. And everybody wants to go after the mighty dollar. And I don't blame them. It's not a bad idea. You need money in life. But in terms of if we're measuring parnasa and how lucrative a field is in terms of dollars and cents, there's much more lucrative fields to go into, trust me. You can go into law, you can go into medicine, you can go into architecture, you can go into anything pretty much, and you'll be doing better than a rabbi will. But that's not always the way that everybody measures success, and everybody measures wealth. And the people that are good at chinuch and the people that really live for chinuch and they get a geschmack in learning Torah and teaching Torah and giving over a Messiah and giving over an Ava and a Yira and a Hadracha, they're the richest people out there. Not parnasa-wise, not in their checkbook. But in this world, they're living for an elevated purpose. And again, this is not to say that other fields do not live for elevated purposes. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm just talking right now about chinuch. We could talk about any field and how every field can make a kiddush Hashem as well. But in terms of chinuch, I think it's something that everybody should consider. If you feel that you have a chush for it, if you feel that, you know, if you feel that it's something that appeals to you and that you love Torah, you love giving over Torah, don't always listen to all the naysayers tell you how it's not good, you're not this and that. Consider it. I'm not saying you have to do it, but consider it. Talk to me about it if you want. But it's a different measure of success and wealth. And this is sort of what Rav Yaakov Galinsky is saying, that if you're able to build something, build a family, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren maybe, and you're able to like give over to them Torah, a mitzvah, a mesira, a love, a passion, and then you're able to have talmidim. You know, sometimes like when I came into this yeshiva, it was about, I think 18 and a half years ago, and I'm still waiting for my cake. Alfredo got many more cakes than I did. And so did Gary now, but one day I'm hoping that Ozzy like, you know, presents me with a cake after Mincha, but I'm joking, please don't, but when I came there were more people in this classroom right now than there were in the entire yeshiva when I came. Every guy had two tables to himself in the base medrash. And then, you know, I'm not saying, you know, Rabbi Shmulevitz, myself, a few other yechidim, you know, we worked very hard. And we went recruiting, and we went, and we spent, you know, a lot of times with the open houses and talking in parlor meetings and going to different places. And the Rabbi Shmulevitz gave us tremendous yad d'shmaya. And sometimes I come into the base medrash in the morning, you know, when things are really cooking in there. And it's like, there's like, I don't know, 150, 200 guys that are really, it's like, whoa, like, what happened here? When did this happen? It used to be like you can hear a pin drop. And that's tremendous nachas, that's tremendous sipuk, because that means that hopefully someday all of that hadracha, all of that chinuch, all of that success, if you will, all that inspiration is working and it's carrying out. And all you guys are gonna, you know, Mirtzah Hashem, have your families, and if you have a little bit more inspiration because of yeshiva, that's gonna trickle down to your talmidim and your children and your grandchildren, and it spreads in a very wildfire type of way throughout the dairis. That's being successful. That's a lucrative career. This lawyer was asking, and this is what you missed, but this lawyer was like very cynical with Ryaku Galinsky, and how much do you make? And what's the take home? What's the pay? What's this? How much do they, do you know how much they're paying you before? And no, only after. I wouldn't be able to do that. He was talking in a very human way. The lawyer is, there's nothing, he's not a bad guy, he's just a regular, he's a regular person. He's judging success and wealth and career based on dollars and cents. You know, what's the starting salary? How much is the raise? What's the bonus? What's the cap? That's how everybody does it. Rabbi Akulinsky wasn't looking at life in those eyes. He wasn't looking at it from a regular human standpoint, from a U.S. News and World Report best career standpoint. He was looking at it from a Nitzchia standpoint. From Avram Avinu's perch in Shemayim, he was Mitzaveh es Banav es Beis Ha'achrav L'lach es B'derech Hashem, and he's a trillionaire today because of all of the ripple effects that his impact, his spiritual impact, his spiritual footprint that still is very much here on planet Earth. Imagine what he's making. That's real take-home pay. Rabbi Akulinsky is saying, I don't know what you have, but I'll tell you what I have. I have children, grandchildren, I have talmidim, I have people that come to my drashas, I have tremendous aisher, but in a different department. They once came to the stipler. You know, the stipler was Yibadol Chaim, Reb Chaim Kanievsky also. Every morning, you know, he was a sandik from many bris, and I was Rebbe Yashiv, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, in his shul, in his little, you know, portable shul there in Mea Sharim, and I was davening there, and then after davening, you know, there was like literally 10 bris in one. He sits in his chair, and boom, boom, it was like an assembly line. You know, everybody wants Rebbe Yashiv to be a sandik, so, you know, one baby, you know, Kriya Shem, out. Another baby, Kriya Shem, out. Like, it was literally an assembly line, and then he goes home. But the stipler also, the stipler, who was his mechutin, he also, everybody wanted the stipler to be the sandik for their child. So somebody once asked the stipler, you know, there's a chazalim that say that a sandik is like the kain gadol who's makter k'tayres, or like the kain that's makter k'tayres, and it's a skula for ashiris, that a k'tayres, whoever, the kain that was makter the k'tayres got very wealthy, supposedly, that's what the Gemara says. And so that's why a sandik isn't supposed to be a sandik twice in one family and whatever. There's a lot, because you want, just like in the Beis Hamikdash, was every sandik got one chance and that was it, because everybody wanted a chance to get wealthy. So that's how also with sandikai. So they asked the stipler one. The stipler was very poor. The stipler was dirt poor. The stipler didn't want to be wealthy. In fact, he wanted to be poor. He once had a dream, the stipler, and he woke up like nervous, and he asked for like three people to do a hatavas chalaim to make the dream better. And you know, when it came to the part of that formula that you say to say what the dream was about, that they should say, no, it's going to be good. He says, I'm embarrassed to say it. No, say it. Say it. The stipler should say it. It was a terrible nightmare I had. So, what was it? He says, I dreamt that I became wealthy. To him, that was like the worst thing that could happen to him. He didn't want to be wealthy. But they asked him, you know, you were a sandik for hundreds, thousands of babies. Where's your wealth? How come it didn't come to you? He says, wealth is a relative term. He says, you're looking at wealth in terms of dollars and cents, millionaires, billionaires, trillionaires. For me, wealth is that my svarim that I wrote, that I worked hard and I published, that they should be niskabel in the Eilam HaTorah. And Baruch Hashem, the Kilos Yaakov, every Ben Daira has a set of Kilos Yaakov, every yeshiva, worn out sets of Kilos Yaakov on the shelf, and you know, his Birchas Peretz, and his Chaya Eilam, and many of his Kraina de Igrisa, many of the Stipus Svarim, best sellers, everyone's learning them. That's wealth for me. In life, you have to define what wealth is. Define success for yourself. First, before you start running out the door and going here and there, this career, that career, and you know, this job, that job, interviews, define success. What do you consider a success? You can't attain success until you define success. Success is not a universally accepted term. What your success is not my success. What my success is not your success. You have to know what is considered a success in your world. And once you have that clear definition, now you have a target, and now you could go after it. But you have to know what your wealth is, what your success is, what your hopes, what your aspirations, what your dreams are. And don't let other people talk you out of them, because you got one life to live. So figure out what you want to do. If you want to go into chinuch, then go into chinuch. But my grandmother said it's a horrible, you know, your grandmother had her chance to live. She did what she wanted to do. And now you got to live your life. It might not be easy, and maybe it's not even feasible, but you have to talk to people that are into it and that, you know, could help you, and maybe you are cut out for it, maybe you're not cut out for it. You have to know. Maybe it's something that will bring you happiness, maybe it won't bring you happiness. Maybe you're passionate enough for it, maybe you're not passionate for it, but you have to know what you want to do. If you want to go into law, you want to go into medicine, you want to go into dentistry, whatever, there's great dreams to be had all across the board. Not, this isn't a pitch for a chinuch over anything else. It's a pitch to be able to do with your life what you feel you will be able to attain that success that you seek. And this is how we have to, you're at a great stage in life because you're young, you're ambitious, and you have everything in front of you. You could pick any major that you want. You could choose any field that you want. You could live wherever you want. You can marry any girl that you want. It's an amazing place to be right now. But don't waste it. Don't squander it. Make good decisions. Speak to people that you trust and that you admire and that you feel, you know, you want to emulate. And try to really choose well. There's a medrash that says that the word bacher, smach bacher bialdesach, it's a medrash in Kayalis, the word bacher, not coincidentally, shares the same sherish as Bechira. Because when you're a Bachar, you get to make decisions in your life. These decisions are going to affect everything. When you're 90 years old, 100 years old, you're going to be affected by the decisions that you're making during this period of your life. So you have to make these decisions really well. First, you got to figure out what you want to do in life, where you're heading in life, what if you would attain this, would you consider that to be a success? And now you have to just keep that in your focus at all times and do what you need to do in order to get there.